To judge the progress of cybersecurity preparedness in the federal government, you've got to take a long-term view. One person who's been tracking cybersecurity and cyber education for more than 20 years, Alan Pallor, Director of Research at the SANS Institute, and he joins me now. Alan, good to have you back.
Good to be here, Tom.
Let's take a look a year after the big deal, which was the OPM breach. We just did a survey of federal practitioners, and they say not a whole lot has changed in the past year since the OPM breach, which should have been, if anything, should have been a wake-up call. That should have been it. What's your take?
My take is that federal cybersecurity has been progressing very rapidly in small places. So as opposed to overall cybersecurity transformation, there are individual agencies, individual groups that are making enormous progress. There are big changes, there are small changes, and they're making a difference. That's all happening in the context of a radically increasing attack surface. So what you see is nothing changing when there's a lot of movement and a lot of attacks.
So give us an example of where there is big change, maybe in a limited zone.
We're on education, so let's start there. The most interesting one is the shift from teaching people security to allowing them to experience security. And it's a move to cyber ranges from classroom education. So you can learn a lot in ground school to be a pilot. It's pretty tough to learn to fly a plane in a classroom. You need to be in the plane and you need to have people with you and you need to experience real situations that you have to learn to respond to. That's what they're doing with cyber ranges. So that's an example of a shift. It's actually part of a much larger shift that's going on.
Just before we move to that larger shift, the cyber ranges are taking place mostly in military settings, or are civilian agencies doing this also?
Most of them are in the intelligence and military world. There are examples in the law enforcement world, and then there are small examples in many other places. That nuclear energy labs are facing the same kinds of attacks the military are, and need their people to really be highly skilled. This is happening mostly in places that have already experienced bad problems and recognize their people were not able to handle them and said, what did we not give those people? And the answer was, we didn't give them enough real world experience to fly in a storm. And we're all experiencing storms.
Interestingly, though, too, what is in common with the military and law enforcement is that not only do they have their own cybersecurity challenges, but they are also responders to cybersecurity challenges of others. For example, if someone attacks infrastructure, there might be a military response, even though doctrine is kind of not caught up with that. Where law enforcement, you know, tries to track down cyber criminals as well as defending its own network. So they have a dual role, which a lot of agencies may not have.
They do have a dual role, but they have something else that the agencies generally don't have. They have a high concentration of skill. And it turns out that most agencies have a very broad and thin layer of cybersecurity. There's a security officer here, there's a specialist there, there's a secure programming person over there, there's a contractor who does monitoring well, another contractor does monitoring terribly. It's this concentration, I think a critical mass, where they actually are getting value out of their people. A lot of the agencies just don't have enough reinforcement for excellence because they don't have anyone higher up who can tell the difference between excellence and just talking about cybersecurity. So I think the reason that the military and the law enforcement are so focused on good skills is that they have proof that it matters, and the other agencies just don't have experience with it.
Yeah, they have engineering inherently in their mission as opposed to someone that's, their mission is to get checks out, for example.
Yeah, they do. DHS is a wonderful example of the mix. So DHS has different groups that have different roles. And in their law enforcement group, they're getting some really good skills. In their non-law enforcement group, they look like every other agency with very, very thin, a few great people, but so thin that they don't get the reinforcement from the management to grow their skills. And what happens is their skills atrophy in the face of the new attacks, and they're just overwhelmed.
We're speaking with Alan Pallor, Director of Research at the SANS Institute. And a moment ago, you said there's a bigger shift happening. Let's get to that.
What we're seeing is that the teaching of cybersecurity and the activities of cybersecurity have run into a hurricane. And the hurricane is that the senior executives in large organizations have figured out that these attacks are all working, and they aren't one attack that happened to get through, but there are dozens or hundreds of attacks that are getting through, and they're recognizing that whatever they were doing to develop skills wasn't working. So that they had good people, great people, but those great people couldn't stop the attacks. They couldn't find the attacks. The average utility that's inside government and outside was infected for 15 months before they discovered they were even infected, which meant they had no competent skills for finding bad stuff that had gotten through. And this actually started about 4 years ago, but it accelerated in the last 18 months. There's a shift in education and in certification from measuring your ability to talk about security and lead security people, which was the thing people thought was necessary, to measuring your ability to actually do the technical work. And there are five or six sort of key red zone jobs in forensics and in secure coding and in advanced penetration testing and in network forensics that are well beyond what people get when they go to college. And, you know, Washington has a bunch of colleges. The undergraduate programs teach none of those things, but they say they do. And this is the key that's hurt a lot of agencies. They have a program that covers those areas that I listed. They're survey courses. So they tell you all about what a person does when he does penetration testing. And they might even have them run a little piece of software. But that's not penetration testing. That's vulnerability analysis. So they don't ever learn to do it. And the transformation is, oh, shoot, we've been accepting people who can admire the problem and not making sure our people can actually fix the problem.
So it's almost like the difference between sketching a really nice looking bridge and actually designing a bridge that can hold 30,000 cars a day.
It's all of that. And it's actually knowing enough about the pieces to build the bridge. Because you can't really design a great bridge if you haven't lived through the breakage and the damage that the windstorms and other things do to bridges that are only have a 2 multiple. I actually have a degree in civil engineering, so people used to build bridges by doubling what their engineering equation said was needed, and those bridges fell down. So now they go 4 times at a minimum. You'd say, well, isn't that a waste? Yeah, but the bridge stays up.
Or the equations could be revised.
And the designer has to know that. The designer can't do just the theoretical work. The designer actually has to have the hands-on skills. And so what's happening is they're moving people out who were the admirers. They're still there in policy roles, but they're discovering that they need IT skills, advanced IT skills in the security people, advanced hands-on skills, and that's what they're paying more for. So for the first time, last year, the number of certifications in the sort of generalized area, the admiring the problem area, actually fell below the number of certifications across the field in the more advanced technical areas, which means the money is there too. People don't get certifications unless there's an economic reason.
All right. And what about the ability of the infrastructure that provides education to keep up with the demand that is there? Or is there just not enough demand?
Well, you had the folks from the Naval Academy talking with you. It's a perfect example. For a long time, the Naval Academy had a very light program in cybersecurity where they covered it as a topic. And about 3 years ago, the dean said, we're not winning the CDX competition against the Army and the Air Force, which means we're probably not teaching the skills we need. And he raised some money and he built a really strong security program that's hands-on. He did that. He was capable of doing that because he had access to people who had hands-on skills. The NSA provided some help. Other technical people had it. Most of the other colleges in the Washington area don't have any of those people. And it's not that they don't exist in Washington. It's that if you have those skills, you're too busy to teach. So the people who teach are the ones who have the general certifications, but they can't do reverse engineering. They can't do advanced forensics. They just don't have the skills. So when they teach survey courses. So Naval Academy is the example in the Washington area where you're really getting high quality undergraduate stuff. And the bigger schools, the ones that are putting out a lot of graduates, those kids are coming to us now saying, we can't get jobs because all we can do is tell people about it. looks like we have to go back and get a master's degree before we have any usable skills. They lied to us, is what we're hearing.
What about the trade school model? Some of those are for-profit, and that's a dirty word now in education, but is there an infrastructure of trade schools that can offer these hands-on skills that people really need?
The trade schools do a really good job on networking, and they're doing
Cisco certification, that kind of thing.
A pretty good job on the coding academies are doing a pretty darn good job on coding skills. But this particular set of five or six skills, they're still too rare that the economics for a teacher aren't good enough to go teach at one of the trade schools. And so Truth in Advertising, SANS actually has a lot of those people, but our teachers make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, not tens of thousands of dollars. And they do that because we have to pay them that much or we can't get the best people to teach the courses.
So that means the personnel shortage that we hear about so much in the federal government and in the private sector for cyber people, that extends to the people that make more cyber people.
Yeah, the shortage is radical. And when you find someone who's good, you've got so many tasks for him that it's very hard to get him even to teach an in-house course. They're exhausted at the end of a day. And there are a lot of agencies that say, well, we haven't been hit. But if you go get the data from US CERT, they've been hit dozens of times, deep penetrations, terrible things, and it takes a lot of time. And the contractors who come in to clean up the mess, they're running out of good people too.
Well, that was my question, because if the government agency would say, and they do say, well, we'll buy this, we'll get this as a service, we'll go to contractors. But apparently that well is at its limit also.
Yeah, the contractors have some extraordinary people. The numbers that we came up with, about 1 in 25 of the cybersecurity people at the contractors are these people with high-end skills. But those people tend to get used in places that have very high-end problems. So the rest of the government's left with the other 24, and they're nice people, but they don't have those hands-on skills that you need.
And something else you said, too, is that this whole idea of what cybersecurity is a moving target. I mean, the bearing qualities of steel in a girder don't change from generation to generation, but the cybersecurity threat itself changes almost daily.
That's an excellent point, Tom. Much of the skill set is constant if you get up to a reasonably high level. So there are people in cybersecurity who got in 30 years ago who think it was all what they learned on the IBM mainframe. That doesn't work. But when you get pretty darn good network forensic skills, you have enough knowledge to analyze the new attack. And as long as you have good sources of data on the methods used in the new attack, you invest the time to keep those skills up, you can stay current. So if you get up to a high enough level, you can actually stay current. You're not overwhelmed. It's if you're too low, it just washes over you like a wave.
We're speaking with Alan Paller. He's director of research at the SANS Institute. Allied to the question of learning about the cybersecurity situation and the engineering of it is the learning of the myriad and growing number of tools out there that purport to be able to help an organization with cybersecurity. And federal executives frequently say, we're overwhelmed with tools. I got a million tools. The question is, what do I do with all these tools? How do I integrate the data they're giving me? So is that an allied part of the cybersecurity education requirement, is learning the tools that are there that are commercially popular?
Three answers. One is that there is training in each of the tools. Checkpoint was the first firewall. The Checkpoint training program, the single most common question asked and the key thing people took back from the training was, how do I open the firewall so people can get through what they need? Meaning, instead of learning how to use it to stop attacks, it was, how do I make sure every application works independent of whether bad guys can come through the same channels? So there is training there. There needs to be more. But in that environment, the tools have to get better. And they have. They've gotten much, much, much better. Three times. So firewalls today are much better. They don't need as much care and feeding, which means they don't need as much skill. So we're part of the solution to this problem is building better tools that don't need as much skill, and they are coming. But what people have done over the years, this is the third piece, is they've layered the tools. So now they have no idea what three layers down is doing, and they have no one who can deal with all of the data. And the most challenging problem is they don't have anyone who can do the engineering, the re-engineering, to know if the tool is still needed. Turns out one company, Cisco, actually has been engineering, not into their tools, but inside their own use, because they have lots of tools, engineering a process that's a solution to this. So I don't like to talk about terrible problems if I don't know at least one solution. What they've done is they've taken every single attack that has gotten through, every single one, they've reverse engineered it, they've seen which of the tools found it or didn't find it, and thrown out the things that aren't doing them any good. So they're using attacks as opposed to saying, oh my God, terrible things are happening. They're using the attacks as the continuous improvement information source, and it's working so that their defenses are getting better and better and better, because if there's an attack that got through that no tool should have found, then they'll build a tool or buy a tool to make sure they can find it. That's the logic, but it takes extraordinary engineering skills.
The concomitant piece then would be to cancel the cancel the license for the tool that didn't do anything.
Right. They're doing a lot of that. They threw them out, and nobody had any trouble. It just, no one knew that they weren't going to have any trouble because they hadn't analyzed what was happening.
Do you think it's gotten through to everyone that is responsible for this in the government, and I guess in contractors, that based on what you've said about the constant need to evaluate the tools and see what worked in every situation, this is never going to be a set and forget activity?
This is an arms race. We are going to be continuing to fight this battle for a long time. There are a couple things, and this is back to education, if you don't mind. There's one key thing that is not being done that, if it could be done, would make a big difference. Right now, almost every attack that happens because there was a software bug in a program that somebody found and exploited. If we could engineer the software with a lot fewer bugs, we would make it much, much harder for people to find and exploit them. The colleges that are teaching programming are giving lip service to security and not teaching or grading secure coding. So if you send a program in that's full of holes, as long as it does the job that was assigned, you get an A. There's nobody checking your grammar to make sure that you're speaking the language safely. And until we get that, we're just going to keep generating more and more opportunities for the criminals.
Alan Paller is Director of Research at the SANS Institute. Thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome, Tom.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.